and we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum in New York.
And I am Chris Cooper from Palm Springs, California. So we are truly bi this week on Gay USA, bi-coastal.
Let's not confuse people. And thank you for doing the show this week, Chris. And Anne tells me she may be back next week.
Excellent.
Okay. So here are the headlines. Would you like democracy in America?
Mm-hmm.
A good start this year would be statehood for the District of Columbia. Our guest is Stasha Rhodes, campaign manager for 51 for 51, the group leading the effort to make it happen.
Meanwhile, it is official. The United States has its first out Senate-confirmed gay cabinet member, Pete Buttigieg, as Secretary of Transportation.
We mourn this week the passing of veteran lesbian activist Carmen Vasquez, who died of COVID this past week.
And in the continuing, really, massacre of Black trans women and other trans women of color, we have two more to report, one in Mississippi and one in Georgia.
We do. One anti-trans bill was stopped in Montana. Another one advanced there, as did another one in South Dakota.
We'll take a look at the passing of two groundbreaking film artists, Cicely Tyson and Hal Holbrook.
Anti-LGBT brutality in Indonesia and crackdowns in Singapore, Malaysia, and Turkey, too.
A TikTok star and YouTube personality comes out at 17.
And
we are going to start, however, talking about how Black people are saving our democracy and how you out there, our viewers, can help Black people continue to save our democracy by helping with DC statehood. So with that in mind, I'm going to turn it over to our guest, who is Stasha Rhodes, the campaign director for 51 for 51. 51 for 51 is a group of young activists who have gathered together in the last 2 years to really push to finally get DC statehood. And so I'm going to explore what that means, why it would save our democracy, or could, what it means for LGBTQ people, and in particular, Stasha, you identify as gay yourself, and you're married to a woman and all that. So it's great to have you on. Welcome. And let's ask you a few questions. First of all, tell us a little bit about 51 for 51.
Awesome. First of all, it's so good to be here with both you, Andy, and Christian. Thank you for having me. And thank you for covering this important issue. 51 for 51 is a national DC statehood campaign that focuses on pushing through DC statehood through the Senate with 51 votes in the Senate, which in other words means avoiding the Senate filibuster. We started about 2 weeks. Yep, go ahead. Sorry.
So let me interrupt you because, you know, a lot of people get confused about this. It doesn't require like a constitutional amendment to make DC a state. It doesn't require like a 3/4 votes of all the other states. All it takes is a majority of the Congress.
That's exactly right. Don't listen to the, I guess, conservative hash of the Constitution that's been made. Like other states, it certainly just means that the House and the Senate have to pass a bill and the president has to sign it, and D.C. becomes a state. And so that's what we're focused on. One of the things that we, though, have highlighted is sort of the inequities in the Senate and how the Senate filibuster plays a role in that. We know we've embraced the political realities that the Senate filibuster allows McConnell and Senate Republicans to block important legislation that many American people support, and that includes DC statehood. And so we have sort of from the beginning set out not just the what, which is DC statehood and all the things that are important in DC statehood that I'm sure we're going to talk about, but the how. And the how is that it has to pass through the Senate with 51 votes in the Senate to ensure that we finally end this stain on American democracy. And that's
all right, why do you call it a stain on American democracy, though? Why is statehood? I mean, what difference does it make? What people in D.C., how does the lack of statehood make their lives any different?
Yeah, it's an amazing question. So I think it's also, first of all, it's good to say this out loud, that most people in America sort of think about Washington, D.C. as the Capitol and the White House and really amazing monuments. And they don't often think about the 700,000 residents that live in the shadows of those things, who are, and many of those folks are disconnected from politics. They're teachers and moms and postal service workers and grocery store workers who pay federal taxes in D.C. and do not have a vote in Congress. And so not being a state means that they have taxation without representation. They don't have a vote on important things like COVID relief, on criminal justice reform, or gun violence prevention. Residents of Washington, D.C. have no senators. They don't have a voting member in the House. And so they're taxed. They have all the responsibilities and not all the same rights as all of the American people. And I guess the final thing that I will say about it is that local authority, the local government, lacks the full authority to control their city or their colony, right? And so their laws and budget are under congressional authority and review. It is unlike any capital, any capital in any place. And so we're working to end that.
I mean, I remember back in the, I believe it was the early 80s, when D.C. City Council repealed its sodomy law, got rid of it, and the Congress reinstated it with a lot of even Democrats voting to reinstate that. It was just outrageous. Now, tell us how you got involved in this personally.
Yeah, that's important. I want to come back to your point about the reversal of the sodomy laws. I personally got involved in this. I was working on gun violence prevention. And in fact, I was working for Gabby Giffords and Mark Kelly in the gun violence prevention fight. And sort of started talking to a number of different people about gun violence in D.C. As a resident of Washington, D.C., D.C. has the ability to sort of govern some of its laws that are subject to being overturned by Congress. But D.C. does not have a federal voice to protect itself from guns that sort of are trafficked from states with bad laws. And so sort of understanding that D.C. has been locked out of democracy, they don't have a vote in the Senate, don't have a vote in Congress. I came to this thinking about the fact that a broken democracy leads to ineffective laws and wanted to lend my voice to that.
And we should point out that you've got more people than two states, Wyoming and Vermont, more people. And you have no representation in the Congress. You have a non-voting member, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's been there forever, but she doesn't get to vote. She just gets to sit in committees. Now,
let's back up to that just a little bit. It's not just that they have more people than Wyoming and Vermont. They have more people than almost all white Wyoming and almost all white Vermont, who each get to send two senators, but predominantly black and brown D.C. doesn't get to send anybody.
Yeah, I think this points to a larger problem of the sort of undemocratic Senate, right? The 50 Democratic senators represent 40 million more Americans than the 50 Republican senators. And it points to the fact that the whiter, redder states have more power than places like D.C., where the 700,000 residents are mostly black and brown. And honestly, the fact that mostly black and brown residents of Washington, D.C. have no vote in Congress is racism. And that's why it's one of the most important issues for me to fight for.
I mean, it took until 1961 for them to even give you three electoral votes in the election of the president, 1961. So what are the chances? What? Go ahead.
Well, I want to speak to that. So the momentum for D.C. electoral representation first gained real traction during the civil rights movement. At the time, D.C. was 65% white and fairly evenly split in terms of party, which gave both parties an incentive to enfranchise residents. But enfranchisement stopped there because by 1970, 70% of D.C. was black. And I think this proves that the disenfranchisement of D.C. residents is clear racism and an effort to minimize black political power.
I am so glad we are talking about this during, I'm so glad we're talking about this during Black History Month. And one of the things I think we have to remember is that history, that the filibuster was used primarily by Southerners as a tool to block civil rights. And now it is being used again. If it is used to block D.C. statehood, it will be the same thing all over again, which is the filibuster used to disenfranchise black people to keep us under the heel of you know, conservative whites from other parts of the country. And, you know, but beyond that, let's come back to those two senators you're talking about. So those two senators, I mean, not to be crass about it, but those two senators would likely be Democrats, right? So we are talking about adding two Democrats to the Senate on a long-term basis. In other words, shifting the balance of power permanently towards something more progressive in the Senate. That to me is saving democracy. But I don't know, what's your take on all of that?
So I have two takes. One is sort of getting back to your filibuster point. The filibuster is the single greatest obstacle to enfranchising over 700,000 residents. It has consistently blocked civil rights legislation, including over 200 anti-lynching bills. D.C. statehood is too important to wait any longer, and that's why we've been fighting to bypass the filibuster to make D.C. the 51st state with 51 votes. And I think, you know, often people say, is this just about getting two more senators for Democrats? This is about representation for the people who are American citizens in Washington, D.C., who do all the things required of them and that they should have a voice. And if that means two senators, yes, this is about two senators because they absolutely deserve two senators to fight for the issues. And it honestly doesn't matter what their party or what their racial makeup is. That's the promise of being American, is that if you pay federal taxes and if you participate in all of the civil rights things that are required of you, then you also get representation in Congress.
And so at John Lewis's funeral, President Obama called the filibuster a relic of Jim Crow. So have you talked to Senator Schumer, that now the majority leader? What is this? I mean, they're certainly talking about modifying the filibuster, I think, but can they just get rid of it for this purpose and say, for purposes of voting on states, there will be no filibuster?
Yeah, I think that Senator Schumer has been an amazing champion of democracy. He has prioritized democracy by making a really broad, sweeping package of democracy reforms, S1, which is really amazing. But he also has come out in favor of D.C. statehood. And so we applaud him for that and thank him for being a champion of democracy. I think a key piece to sort of talk about here is that we are not going to pass this without eliminating the filibuster. And yes, you're able to bypass the filibuster for specific things. I think a really good example is how the rules have been changed to confirm Supreme Court justices with 51 votes. Mitch McConnell has been a lead figure in that. He's been able to do that with three Supreme Court justices, most recently with Justice Barrett. And so if it's good enough for a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court, it certainly should be good enough for 700,000 residents to have access to the democracy that surrounds them.
Okay.
Fantastic. What can our viewers do to help push this forward?
So the first thing your viewers can do is call their senators, because D.C. residents cannot. D.C. residents have no senators, and they have no say in this fight. And so call your senators and ask them two questions. One, the bill was recently introduced. Are they a co-sponsor of the bill? We are excited about the amount of co-sponsors that have signed on to this bill, but there are still a number of Democrats that have not signed on to this bill. And so we're asking them to sign on to show their support for the most urgent civil rights effort of our time, giving representation to residents of Washington, D.C., finally, after over 200 years. And then second, when the bill comes for a vote, to ensure that they're champions and that they vote for this and that they communicate communicate why this is important. One of the things that I love, this is Black History Month, so I'll take a second to just say one of my favorite Dr. King quotes is that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And right now in Washington, D.C., the 700,000 residents who are mostly Black and Brown are disenfranchised. And it's a thing that doesn't often get talked about. This is our time. There is no reason why we should not pass D.C. statehood now. Democrats have control of the White House, the U.S. House, and the Senate. And so it will no longer be a feeling of that we can't. It will be a decision not to. And so please call your senators now.
What are you going to call the state? What are you going to call the state?
Look, I think I won't get into those things. Here's what I will say. Because everyone, I think folks have opinions and they should.
Right.
I think what's really important about this is it gets to a really good question, is that once it's final, because it will be final, once D.C. becomes a state, the residents of Washington, D.C. actually are empowered to make decisions for D.C., right? They're actually able to say, what's it going to be called? Who's going to represent us in the Senate? How is our criminal justice system impacted? What are the rules for any of those things, right? And so that's what's important, is that the people actually have power, and that's why we're supporting this.
And the same thing for Puerto Rico, if they ever decide to really build up the statehood movement. I also should say, and I don't want to dilute what you're doing, make that one call to your senators and tell them to vote for D.C. statehood. And then make another call to tell them to vote for the For the People Act, H.R. 1, and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Because if we don't do these things now, the whole country is going to be much more undemocratic at the state legislatures and everything.
I want to plus one to that and just say, over the summer, tons of Americans, thousands of Americans took to the street after the murder of George Floyd because finally America took a moment to recognize its racist history and presence, right? And so one thing that I want to say is that racism isn't just in our criminal justice system or in policing. It's in the very fabric of American democracy. And so locking out voters, locking out people in Washington, D.C., or residents in any place that are disenfranchised, and from having access to democracy is racism. And that's what we're expecting. That's why Black and Brown voters delivered the Senate, the White House, and the U.S. House to Democrats to make bold structural changes so that we can face these injustices and make real change.
And I think that's important to remember, is that it was Black voters who delivered the Senate with the Georgia vote. It was Black voters in the city cores and the swing states that swung the swing states our way. So it really was, as I said at the top of the show, and I think appropriately for Black History Month, Black voters were saving our democracy, because we tend to vote Democratic, and the Republican Party has gone off a cliff of insanity. So if we're going to save the democracy, we've got to get more Democrats in there. And I want to make a last plea, or not a plea, but point out the intersectionality that we talk about all the time on this show. You, especially Andy, talk about the intersectionality. Ann talks about it, about how, you know, Black and Brown people, LGBTQ people, you know, it's not separate. We are together in the bodies of people like me, in the bodies of people like Stasha. And our struggle is united. If you can see that simply by the fact that if we can get DC statehood, how much that's not just going to do for the Black and Brown people of DC and all the people of DC, but what two more senators on a more progressive level is going to do for LGBTQ people nationwide. So that's the intersectionality that we're always talking about on the show. And I think, you know, get on the phone, write that letter, talk to your senator, tell them you want DC statehood, tell them you want DC statehood regardless of the filibuster.
Now.
But you want them to go around the filibuster, and you want it now, please.
Last word, Stasha, and tell them how to get in touch with you at 51for51.org. The number 51, F-O-R, 51, the number again, .org. But last word to you.
I just want to thank you for covering this issue. I think it's a really important issue, and I think What's really important right now is that the media and all of the folks like you all are talking about democracy. All of the things that we care about are directly connected to the rules of democracy. And so don't leave that conversation out. If you're talking about comprehensive COVID relief, if you're talking about robust criminal justice reforms, you're talking about democracy as well, because how we get there really depends on a strong and responsive democracy. And so thank you for covering this issue.
Thank you for doing it, and keep us posted, and we'll keep letting our viewers know where the pressure points are going forward. Thank you, Stasia.
Thank you, Stasia.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Andy, we can just leave now. We can because there's young activists like that coming up. We're going to get it all done.
Keep at it. By the way, when you were talking about the Republicans, you know, remember the Georgia races when the Republican candidates kept calling their opponents, Warnock and Ossoff, socialists and communists. They're the ones who are working for democracy. Exactly. Republicans don't want democracy.
No, they do not.
Anyway. All right.
So on to other news.
Let's get back to the news.
The big news, the headline is that Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, was confirmed by the Senate to become our Secretary of Transportation. And he is the first out gay confirmation from the Senate to a cabinet level position.
There were 13 votes against him, the two from Texas, two from Tennessee, pretty predictable. His husband, Chasten Buttigieg, held the book, and he was sworn in by Vice President Harris. It was historic.
Yeah, it was huge. I guess we shouldn't go through the names of who. Why even give them the airtime?
Go to my Facebook page.
Note that he is not the first cabinet level out gay person. Sadly, the first cabinet level out gay person was Richard Grenell, that awful homo con who was appointed by President Trump as an acting director of National Intelligence.
He's whining about it now. But yeah, we're very careful here on Gay USA to say this is the first Senate confirmed. And then the State Department has an out gay spokesperson now, Ned Price. You probably recognize him if we put the picture up there from cable television. He was a longtime national security hand, an SC spokesperson for Obama. But he resigned in 2017 because he couldn't stand what was going on in the department. Very alarmed over Trump, who wouldn't be. And he became a frequent critic. His new deputy is Jelena Porter, the first black woman in that role. And the U.S. has now, the U.S. has had 14 gay ambassadors, but no lesbian, bisexual, or transgender ones. So come on.
Incremental steps. The important thing also about having someone who is openly gay in that position is that the spokesperson for the United States State Department is going to be going in front of countries and speaking about problems in countries that include some that still criminalize same-sex relations.
When we get to international news, you're going to understand how important that is.
Exactly.
So Biden had a big week with executive orders again. He reopened Obamacare with plans for outreach. You know, Trump shut all that down. He did his executive orders on immigration, protecting Dreamers and trying to deal with the stuff at the border. A lot of people are saying it's not strong enough because it's quite a crisis down there. He stepped up vaccine distribution. He restored aid for reproductive health around the world. And he condemned the imprisonment of Navalny, the Russian dissident leader who's just been put away for 2 years.
Yeah, the Navalny situation keeps snowballing. Apparently all of Russia or half of Russia is in protest now. And Navalny even said, you can't lock up the entire country. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But it's nice, isn't it, to have an administration that is actually protesting Russia and pushing back as opposed to saying, who cares? Putin, he's my pal.
That's where Trump is going to end up in exile. Biden has replaced tons of Trump plants. I don't mean, you know, but people who were installed at the last minute. But in Buttigieg's Department of Transportation, Trump installed a horrible inspector general and was confirmed by the Senate by one vote. And those are harder to remove because then, you're going after the independent inspector general. So he may have some problems there, but I think Pete knows how to handle it. And then Alejandro Mayorkas was confirmed as Homeland Security, the first Latinx person and the first immigrant in the post.
Well, and there also Biden signed the executive order going after specifically the separations at the border and trying to undo them and reunite those families, which, you know, that's the great shame of this country in the last
couple of years. Massive job. And Nancy Pelosi, if we have time, we'll show you this video at the end. But she was asked about the Equality Act, and it is a priority. The House had already passed it last year, but this is a new Congress. She'll have to do it again. And then we have to get it through the Senate. And it would help to get rid of the filibuster if we're going to pass our Equality Act.
Now, one thing we should make clear is that you don't have to get rid of the filibuster entirely to get D.C. statehood. You can you can carve out an exception for statehood issues.
And they better.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no excuse, for the Democrats not to get this done. They can't blame the Republicans anymore. It is entirely within the power of Democrats to get that get this done and make sure you let them know that you know that.
Now, Chris, you're still domiciled in New York?
I am still domiciled in New York. I am temporarily.
Get after Schumer.
Yes.
And Gillibrand.
But if you're in California, get after Dianne Feinstein, because she is, I understand it, is one of the filibuster must remain intact people. So, you know, you want to really sort of start putting pressure on her if you live in California. If you live in New York,
okay.
Our state, our U.S. senator is the majority leader. So we have a lot of sway that we didn't have before.
Right. So the Twitter account of Focus on the Family was suspended for calling Biden's pick of trans woman Rachel Levine as the number three at Health and Human Services a man.
Hmm.
Rachel is transgender. 350 organizations are backing her nomination from 42 states, D.C., and Puerto Rico.
Okay. And in another sort of side note from social media, if you remember the Lincoln Project from the election, they were the conservatives, but conservatives against Trump, who ran a lot of ads to really sort of tweak him and annoy him and get under his skin, which was a good thing. But they're still arch conservatives. And one of them, one of the co-founders of the Lincoln Project, a guy named John Weaver, is now embroiled in a gay sexting scandal. Now, he's married and he has two children, but he's been sexting.
Married to a woman.
Married to a woman and with two children. But he's been embroiled in the sexting scandal to young men who were working for him or looking to work for the Lincoln Project, who felt he could help their career. And it was just really unseemly and, you know, was described as aggressive and pressuring them, and they felt preyed upon. This was all reported in the New York Times, and it's really the Lincoln Project has come out very strongly against their co-founder.
This guy, John Weaver, was John McCain's closest aide, and he also worked for Kasich's presidential campaign. But now he says, the truth is I'm gay, and that I have a wife and two kids, and who I love. My inability to reconcile those two truths has led to this agonizing place. Well, it may be agonizing for you. It wasn't too nice for the people you were harassing, including one who was 14.
Yeah, I feel for your agony in that situation. I do not feel for how you handled it by sexting youngsters. Not appropriate, not good, and borderline sexual harassment. So
Donald Trump Jr. jumped right in and condemned this guy, you know, as a
surprise, surprise.
And he's the spawn of Donald Trump, who you remember as a friend to Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. 21 men have accused Weaver of sexually harassing them, and more than that number of women have accused Donald Trump of sexually harassing or raping them. All right, Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's all over the news, but one of her things this week was calling our rainbow flag a hate America flag. Hate America flag. She's sponsoring a bill that U.S. embassies will be banned from flying them.
Just in case you don't recognize the name, which I doubt, but she is the absolutely off the charts lunatic QAnon following pedophiles eating babies.
By the time people see this show, they'll know what the Republicans and the Democrats have decided to do with her.
Yeah, she's in the House of Representatives, and she is a problem for the Republicans. And I can't say I feel sorry for the Republicans. I cannot say that in the slightest. They are reaping what they have sown.
Right. So some sad news. I want to talk about a longtime lesbian activist, Carmen Vasquez, who we knew very well here in New York. She has died of COVID at the age of 70. She was born in Puerto Rico, raised in New York City, where she was a troublemaker in Catholic school, but rose to get a master's degree in education at CUNY, City University of New York. She was an anti-war activist. She fought to preserve open admissions at CUNY, create a Black and Puerto Rican studies department there. She worked in San Francisco on the staff of the Women's Center and the Women's Building. As AIDS grew in 1986, she became the director of Gay and Lesbian Health Services in San Francisco at their DOH. In 1994, she was director of policy in New York for the LGBT Community Center until 2003, deputy director of the Pride Agenda, our advocacy group here, and then director of LGBT Health Services at New York State. So she only retired in 2019, and she got hit by COVID. So, folks, this virus continues to move fast. Strains of it that could be harder to handle are moving. Please take care. Please take care. Now is not the time to let your guard down. Get vaccinated. I mean, you've heard it, but we've got to do it.
The National LGBTQ Task Force Executive Director, Rhea Carey, described Carmen Vasquez as a fierce Puerto Rican butch who wrote, spoke, organized, mobilized, and willed with her small but powerful body justice and liberation into this world.
She was generally in a jacket and tie. She was great. She was fierce.
We have, unfortunately, more sad news, which is that an electronic music producer known as Sophie died in an accidental fall. Apparently, Sophie was very instrumental in innovating in the electronic music scene, was only 34, and died in Athens, Greece.
One of the few transgender Grammy winners. And then there was Lee Mentley, M-E-N-T-L-E-Y. We have a picture of Lee, who described himself as the princess of Castro Street. He died January 20th in Sonora, California at 72. He threw himself into art and activism. He was among the group that created the first LGBT community center in San Francisco, where he ran the top floor gallery. He was the first out employee at the neighborhood arts program of the San Francisco Arts Commission. This stuff was in the early 70s, folks. He was executive director of the Pride Foundation in 78, helped facilitate the creation of the rainbow flag with Gilbert Baker, his roommate. Also active in the movement in Hawaii, Los Angeles, and New York City, his friend Robert Kronquist relayed that his last words to his friend Pamela Goodlow were, "We elected Warnock and Ossoff, Biden and Harris. My work is done. What's left to do?" And then he died. That's what happened. Anyway. And then there was, I didn't know him, Ron Levin, a very famous hair colorist to the stars, including Marilyn Monroe and Farrah Fawcett and Margot Hemingway. He is survived by his partner, Kenneth Schiller. He died at the age of 81.
In film and television, we lost two really fairly major stars. And I'll talk a little bit about Cicely Tyson, if only because in my family, and I think in a lot of Black families, she was just sort of like assumed. She was almost part of the texture of the arts and entertainment in any Black family's life. And I think a lot of people now don't recognize the name and don't know her. People who aren't
Black. What do you mean? She just came out with her memoir.
I know. It just came out this week, like right after she died. I know.
At 96.
I think a lot of people may not have known her, but in Black families, we all knew her. And one of the reasons why she took such a central part, even though she didn't have a lot of film output on the big screen, was because she refused to take roles that demeaned Black women. She wouldn't play the maid. She wouldn't play the hooker. All the things, all the stereotypes we were relegated to the film, she refused to do it. And I read one New York Times reporter who described that as, you know, being in her position and refusing to take those roles was the equivalent of going on a hunger strike, because it meant you weren't working.
And so she played iconic roles in Sounder, which just reran on television. I saw it in 1972, where Pauline Kael said she created the first great Black heroine on screen. And then, of course, the autobiography of Jane Pittman on television in 1974, where she, you know, her character lived to be 112 or something. It was some ridiculous thing. She won two Emmys for that. In Roots, she was Mother Binta, right?
Well, yeah, and it's funny, the whole thing about the whole MacGuffin of the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman was that she starts as an enslaved person, Miss Jane Pittman. As a child, she's an enslaved person, and then they follow her all through her hundred and some odd years of life. You know, and it's fiction, of course, but it was a way to carry the sweep of Black history. And better to do that than Cicely Tyson?
First Black woman to host Saturday Night Live for you kids, but that was back in 79. In 2013, she did The Trip to Bountiful and won a Tony Award for it on Broadway. She was in The Gin Game with James Earl Jones, the Horton Foote play, at the age of 90. I saw her. I couldn't believe this 90-year-old was up there on stage the whole time. I mean, James Earl Jones was only about 86.
There is a gay angle to all of this in that she was in The Women of Brewster Place, which was a TV miniseries that was one of the first that featured Black lesbians in a central role. Now, Cicely Tyson didn't play one of the Black lesbians. She played the mother of one of the other characters. But the fact that she was part of this was, and that this was so important, because it actually brought visibility to Black lesbians that had never been there before.
We're mainly talking about it because she was such a trailblazer. And also in that category was Hal Holbrook, who was a great actor, of course, very famous for playing Mark Twain on stage thousands of times. He was Deep Throat in All the President's Men. But in 1972, when I was a second year in college, the movie of the week on ABC was That Certain Summer, where he played the lover of Martin Sheen. And he's a divorced guy who's got a kid, and Hope Lang is his wife and everything. But wow, I mean, for this to be appearing in prime time in 1972, I don't think they made out or had a love scene or anything, but it was all about being gay and trying to deal with your kid and all those things. And it was very brave of him to do that. And Martin Sheen, of course, Martin Sheen's back in the sack with, what's the show of Grace and Frankie?
Right.
Yeah. As a gay man yet again.
For me, the movie that came out when I was in college, I was like, oh, they're doing something gay on the big screen, was Making Love with Michael Ancine and Ari Hamlin and Kate Jackson. Not a very good movie, but it was like, oh, they're doing a movie about gays.
Well, we don't have enough time. That's a great story. Call me up. I'll tell you about it. the guy who bought the studio and hated that film. Anyway, and also in very, you know, just horrifying news, a Black trans woman, Dominique Jackson, shot to death in Jackson, Mississippi on January 25th. At least, of course, there's been the third and now the fourth violent deaths of transgender or gender nonconforming people in 2021. Dominique was the mother of the House of Red and the founder of the Lady Red Incorporated. Last year, there were 44 such deaths recorded. Dominique was misgendered in early articles. That's why we're telling you about her now. And then there was Bianca Muffin Banks, who was killed in Atlanta on January 17th in the Bankhead area. A murder-suicide, as a man was found dead by her side. Multiple gunshots fired. Her funeral is being paid for by the Trans Housing Coalition, who also provided her with housing.
So sadly, 2021 is off to a similarly awful start for trans people, and especially trans people of color, in terms of the murder rate.
And look at what they're doing to us in the States, in Montana. Now, they had a bill attacking trans youth, that one bill that got stopped at the last minute. They got five people to change their votes, and it had passed the House 53-47.
Very interesting. That bill was actually about forbidding treatment, transgender treatments for minors.
That's
and
correct.
What happened was they were able to convince those five legislators that, look for a second, this is all done under the supervision and care and consent of the parents and guardians and the doctors, and it is a gradual process that occurs over years. So nothing irreversible happens until they're out of their minor years anyway. So
they met with the parents of transgender kids. Yes. And that helped. But a second bill passed banning trans girls and women from competing in school sports as their gender, and a similar bill was passed in South Dakota.
This is where the, you know, the right wing is still getting traction. They're not able to get much traction, being purely anti-gay, but by going anti-trans, they're still able to get traction in some places, in some jurisdictions.
Anti-trans is one of the favorite issues of Donald Trump Jr., which I guess he'll be raising when he runs for president in 2024. Anyway, in New York State, though, we've been telling you about it. They did pass the bill to repeal the anti-walking while trans bill. It's an anti-loitering bill that was passed by a Manhattan legislature who didn't like seeing streetwalkers.
And Cuomo signed it.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
this was promoted by our state senator here, mine, Brad Hoylman. So now we'll see if we can actually get the cops to stop harassing trans women on the street, which is just horrendous. In Pennsylvania, the lieutenant governor, John Fetterman, you know, the big guy who wears the, you know,
the Klingon.
Yeah, he's great. He's running for Senate in 2022. He hangs flags outside his window in the Capitol where he's the lieutenant governor. Two rainbow flags and a pro-legalization of marijuana flag. So they passed a law that said you can't have any other flag but the American flag or the Pennsylvania flag. But he says, you keep taking them down, I'm going to keep putting them up.
There is a freedom of speech issue there somewhere. So,
and Aetna Insurance is agreeing to expand coverage for gender-affirming surgeries, including breast augmentation, which had been considered cosmetic for transgender people. All right. Where are we? How about some international news?
All right. Hold on. Let me toggle over to international.
Well, we can start in Poland, where there have been massive protests against the government has gone ahead and implemented the Constitutional Court decision banning virtually all abortions. Now, there were 2,000 legal abortions in Poland under the old law last year, and 200,000 women who left the country or did it illegally in the country. So it's just awful. But South Carolina has done the same thing here.
Well, also, while we're still in Poland, they got a little piece of bad news, good news for us. But thanks to the Nordic countries and little tiny Liechtenstein, Norway, Iceland, and Liechtenstein all canceled their grant to a Polish region, the Carpathian Mountains, because they declared themselves an LGBT-free zone with no LGBT ideology allowed. And as a result, these countries who had been funding this culture and natural heritage project in the Carpathian said, that goes against our values of non-discrimination. And so they pulled the plug and pulled the money.
They lost something like over
$2.25 million.
Yeah. Oh, and they're whining about it. Oh, we don't hate it. We don't hate anybody. These are just our values. We love everybody. The hell with you. All right. In the United Kingdom, this is a sweet story. The headmaster of St. Dunstan's in South London, he came out to his students in an online assembly, Nicholas Hewlett, 41. He's the first headmaster to come out in this way. He was inspired because he was listening to one of the kids talking about being gay and coming out. And he said, my God, if this kid can do it, I can do it. He says, I was told when I was first a teacher, you know, that some friends knew he was gay or colleagues, and they said, if you're out, you're never going to be the headmaster. So he's been the headmaster for 7 years, and he said, I can do it now. If this kid can have courage, I can have courage, and he did it.
That's fabulous, and that actually is something Kevin Jennings did with GLSEN when he formed that. The point was to allow teachers to be out in their job.
It's very tough for teachers to control. I know a lot of gay teachers, few are out, but they feel it's very hard to control the classroom if the kids sort of have this on them, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I understand how tough it can be. Many are out to their colleagues, but it's harder. They find it harder to be out to students, but it's changing.
I do work in the schools, volunteer work. Yeah, you know this, so about the birds. So I go into the classroom and work with in public schools and work with the kids, teaching them about birds and birding. And I'm always a little bit like, you know, well, what do I do about the gay thing? Ultimately, it usually doesn't come up. But you know, I kind of decided I they need the role model. So yeah, I'm going to be out if I'm going to go into this classroom.
Well, that's what Anna and I did for a living when we worked at Hetrick Martin. Yes. We came in and said, we're your local homosexuals, you know, or gay people and lesbian. And that was what we did all day long. But we got to leave. We didn't have to stay there and teach the math. Anyway. All right.
Before we leave the UK, we should talk about something that you should keep your eyes on the UK for this week, which is something called the UK Privy Council. Because Bermuda, the ongoing saga of same-sex marriage in Bermuda, is finally landing in the Privy Council this week. And that's where ultimately this will be decided. Someone who knows more about the British system, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that this is their Supreme Court. So this is the last stop for this.
I'm sure it's grounded in slavery, just like our government.
Probably. But the bottom line is Bermuda had same-sex marriage by court decree. The Bermuda Supreme Court said, hey, you know what? This violates civil rights. So, you know, you got to do same-sex marriage. Then they had a referendum hastily, you know, convened by various right-wing forces in Bermuda, and they passed a law that says, oh, no more same-sex marriage. Now you can only have civil unions. And of course, some gay people in Bermuda have appealed this, and it has been going through the winding its way through the British courts. And this week, it will finally hit that Supreme British Court, the Privy Council, because Bermuda is a colony of the UK. I forget the proper term, a British overseas territory. That's it. And so ultimately, this goes back to Britain, and that's what will be decided this week.
I've never been, have you?
I have, multiple times. It is a lovely little island, very easy to get to, but, you know, like so many places, it can have its conservative homophobic streak. So hopefully a good decision here will help push things in the right direction.
We have some of that in New York, too. And not leaving the United Kingdom, Robert Cohan has died. He's the guy who brought contemporary dance to Britain. He's died at the age of 95. He was born in New York, and he served in Britain in World War II, but he came back and became a principal dancer with the Martha Graham Company. And then he went back over there, I think with a boyfriend, and formed the London Contemporary Dance Theater, creating generations of dancers and choreographers. He was even knighted in 2019.
Jumping over to Asia in Korea, there's a new definition of family that they've instituted in South Korea because they're having some massive demographic crisis. For the first time ever in the last year, they lost more people through death than they gained through births. So they're trying to bolster the family. But guess who they left out of this new
definition? Well, they did embrace single parents and unmarried cohabitating partners.
If they're heterosexual.
Right.
But they did not embrace gay people. So that is a huge oversight. It's going to cost them if they're trying to fix their demographics. So, you know, what fools that?
We're allowed to raise children. We just can't get any legal protection for it. That's their attitude. Marriage is on a very downward trend there, and they won't open that to same-sex couples, which would probably... All right. In Turkey, four university students were arrested in Istanbul for artwork depicting LGBTQ rainbow symbols alongside an image of a sacred Islamic site, the Kaaba, at the center of the Grand Mosque. Interior minister called them deviants. Students were protesting the appointment of a right-winger as the rector of the university, Bogosici University.
This is why it's so important that we have an out gay spokesperson for the State Department.
Well, I hope he can talk some sense to Erdogan. In Mexico, Tlaxcala, the state Congress there, they passed marriage equality back in December, but the governor will not post it on the website or in the official proceedings because he's against it. So
they've been fighting a losing battle in Mexico, these right wingers trying to tack against same-sex marriage when it just keeps spreading state by state by state. So, you know, he's done. It's just a matter of time.
Indonesia, two men were caned in the Aceh province where they have Sharia law. Caned. I'm not going to show you because it's too gross. They were caned 77 times for having sex with each other. You can also get caned there for having extramarital sex or drinking alcohol, even though it's less caning. It's barbaric. And then Grindr was fined $11.7 million under European privacy law for illegally disclosing details about their users to advertising companies.
Well, and that's huge because a lot of it has tracking information. And in fact, some Times reporters tested that tracking information. And it was the Grindr app was able to pinpoint their location to the side of the building that they were in. So, you know, when you're talking about vulnerable LGBTQ people using Grindr in some of those 70 countries we're talking about where gay sex is still criminalized, that can be a huge vulnerability. So it's important.
A Singapore court upheld their male sodomy law. They don't have one for women, apparently. Three activists have launched an appeal, and three LGBT protesters in Singapore were arrested for protesting the government's mistreatment of a trans student who was blocked from getting hormone therapy. But you're not allowed to protest in Singapore unless you get a special permit. It's ridiculous.
All right, we're going to run out of time.
All right, well, Malaysia's doing bad things, proposing bad things. Japan is being pushed to ban discrimination in advance of the Olympics, and Quebec court affirmed trans and non-binary rights. Okay, and I just a quick AIDS note. The U.S. regulators have approved the first long-acting drug combo for HIV. All right, so that's the two monthly shots. It only costs $5,940 for the first two shots. Oh, my God. And $4,000 per month thereafter.
Economical.
Entertainment anyway. News.
Entertainment news. Well, let's start with the Golden Globes. They announced the nominees, and there is a lot of gay content in there. First of all, Schitt's Creek has five nominations. They were a big winner last year. Fantastic, wonderful comedy series if you've never seen it. But amongst the nominations it got was Best Comedy Series. Also, Daniel Levy, who is gay, as Best Supporting Actor, and then his dad who appears in it.
Is he doing Saturday Night Live this weekend? Is that what's happening with him? I think. Anyway.
I don't know. And the wonderful Catherine O'Hara, who is the best thing about the show. I mean, there's a lot of good things about the show, but she is fabulous. She got nominated again. She won last year, I think. But it's interesting to note that openly gay Daniel Levy, in that Best Supporting Actor category, is going up against Jim Parsons, also openly gay, for his role in Hollywood in the same category. Also nominated, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which, of course, focuses on the lesbian Ma Rainey, but also on the character played by Chadwick Boseman, the late Chadwick Boseman, who died of colon cancer. So he's up for Best Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. And Viola Davis, who plays Ma Rainey, is up for Best Actress in a Motion Picture Drama. Two lesbians up for Ratchet, Sarah Paulson for Best Actress in a Drama Series and Cynthia Nixon for Best Supporting Actress. And then The Prom got nominated for Best Comedy Film, and James Corden for Best Actor in a Musical or Comedy Film. James
Corden. And his portrayal was so controversial.
Right, it was very controversial.
I hated the movie. And then Laverne Cox played a small role in Promising Young Woman for Best
Comedy Film. And Jodie Foster got a Best Supporting Actress nomination for a film called The Mauritanian. Now, I haven't seen The Mauritanian, but I have seen Promising Young Woman, and I can give it a very, very high recommendation. It is something of a film that will challenge all kinds of thoughts and prompt all kinds of discussion. So I highly
recommend. Where can we see it?
Promising Young Woman can be streamed. I'm trying to remember exactly on what service, and I can't.
Send me an email, and we'll put it in our email.
I will indeed. And similarly, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom can be streamed, and again, I'm blanking on which service. And that I also give a high recommendation. It is a little stagey because it is an adaptation of a stage play
by August Wilson.
But the performances in particular by August Wilson, exactly, the immortal August Wilson. But the performances from Chadwick Boseman and especially from Viola Davis are just right. Not
so good. Those winners will be announced on February 28th, Sunday night on NBC, and the Oscar nominations announced on March 15th, and the ceremony is not until April 25th. This year, this crazy year.
I can make two other recommendations in this crazy year of things you might want to stream. One of them is Small Axe. And now that's axes in the thing you would hack down a tree with, Small Axe. And it is a series of, I believe, five feature-length films. I mean, each one is about 2 hours long, but it is a series of them that all focus on the Black experience of Caribbean blacks in the UK. And it's really fascinating. I've seen three of them so far. The first one in particular just really knocked my socks off in terms of the artistry. They've all been directed by Steve McQueen, who is a major motion picture director who brought us 12 Years a Slave and won an Oscar for that. So these are real sort of high quality stuff and worth taking a look at. And the other recommendation I make, and in addition to A Promising Young Woman and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, is a movie from 2007 that I just rewatched last night. I'd forgotten how good it is. It's called The Mist. It's based on a Stephen King novella. It is a horror movie. It is gripping. It's terrifying. But it's also terrifying because of what happens in the story to the people and how the crazies are able to take over and what happens when they do in a society or in a microcosm of society, just as we're kind of seeing now in the United States, where the crazies are actually legitimized and get traction and what happens because of that.
Do you have a little time this afternoon to just list these so I can include them in the email?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I will come more prepared with what streaming service these are available on.
And if you want to be on our email list, go to gayusatv.org, and you can sign up on the homepage there for it. You can also see the show there if you ever miss it on TV. And speaking of award shows, the Queerty Awards are being voted on right now.
The Queerties? Really?
February 16th, and nominated for, and this is a tough category, for Badass is Christian Cooper.
So
you're up against Pete Buttigieg, Mary Trump, Lena Waithe,
Lady Gaga.
Come on! I mean, what a cat! And you're also up against Elliot Page, who we learned this week is divorcing from their wife Emma Portner. Emma had stood by Elliot during the transition, but they're divorced and they're happy and they're friends, which is the way it should be. I'm friends with all my exes, the ones who are still alive. Mm-hmm. And the Tony Awards, you know, they had that truncated season and they made nominations and they haven't given out any awards. They're not going to give out any awards until there's going to be a Broadway season, which might not be for another year, but they're going to let the voters vote on who's nominated now in March, because before they forget what they saw, there's a lot of gay stuff up there, The Inheritance, Slave Play, and a little bit of Moulin Rouge and Grand Horizon.
So they're going to vote on the nomination, on who to nominate?
No, or vote on nominated. The now they're going to vote on the winners.
Okay, but they're not going to announce those winners for like a year.
Until there's another Broadway season, because it's always on the eve of the new Broadway season. And we ain't having a season this year.
Gotcha.
I hope we will next year. But when are people going to get back in theaters and breathe the same air?
I'm in withdrawal from not being able to go to the movie theater, you know, not inhale the smell of popcorn and lose myself in the dark. You know, it's just...
You make popcorn sometimes for old time's sake?
Well, but there is that particular fake butter movie theater popcorn, yes, that has a particular je ne sais quoi.
It's true. We're running out of time. The reboot of Sex and the City is going to address COVID-19 and how it's like dating when you're COVID has stymied sex and social lives. By the way, a viewer wrote that, I got to look at our time here. We got 30 seconds. A viewer wrote that I said, did the birth rates go up because of COVID? No, they went down because of lockdown. They went down. People, I don't think, want to bring kids into the world. And JoJo Siwa came out, the TikTok star at 17. That's a big deal for the kids on YouTube. All right? At the age.
All right. You know what? If you haven't done it already since we started the show, contact your senator now.
DC statehood now. Thanks, Chris.
My pleasure, Andy.